Let's bust this nut, kids.
Do you want to build a snowman?
No, don't do that.
Why not?
Don't do that.
What was it in Deadpool? He talks about the two... Oh, yeah. Papa, can you hear me? And do you want to
build a snowman? Papa, can you hear me?
Do you want to build a snowman?
Nobody noticed.
Everybody noticed.
It's the same from Yentl.
You know, I've seen that movie multiple times.
Deadpool?
Yentl.
Okay.
Fuck Deadpool. Yentl is where it's at.
What?
It's the other way around. I don't know. What else?
Unpopular opinion. Fuck you, Jake.
Unpopular opinion?
No, I'm kidding. It's totally popular.
I have plenty of unpopular opinions I can talk about.
I know you do. Just stop talking. So, hi. Welcome back. This is episode 8 of Too Scared to Sleep. Hopefully, this episode will be released around the same time as episode 7. Again, we apologize for the delay that we've had, but, you know, life happens.
I'd just like to say that it's all Annabelle's fault.
I mean, yeah, it is, but we forgive you because we have to. This is all at your house.
She kept going out of town and getting sick and, I don't know, going to school. Why are you going to school still? We're going to do this full time.
This is going to be our life.
I have a 5-step plan. I have taken out a high interest loan. No, I'm just kidding.
That's how you do it.
That's exactly how you do it.
That's how all the business people are doing it.
That's right. And then we'll just file for bankruptcy in like 5 years from now.
Exactly. Just like Nick Cage, man.
Just like Nicolas Cage.
I love Nicolas Cage.
That's why he makes those shitty movies. He's got to pay. It's like he has like one payment to do. Some big, you know, he's got lawyer's fees.
So
he makes a shitty movie.
Like Gerard Butler.
Wow, I feel bad for Gerard Butler.
I do, because he can be a good actor.
Everything has gone downhill since he was in Phantom of the Opera.
I actually didn't realize he was in Phantom of the Opera.
That's right. I bet you he wishes he wasn't in Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
But he was in Phantom of the Opera.
Oof.
Anyway.
Anyway.
I've got nothing. We saw each other 2 days ago.
I know.
And I've seen you since then.
Yeah, I know.
Annabelle, anything?
Are you done?
That's what you have to add? Is the coughing and the smacking and the chewing? Hey, just last night...
I was trying to hold it in.
Hey, Annabelle, have you ever thought about shutting up?
Maybe you shouldn't inhale your food.
I wanted to so bad.
What's funny is that we were so bored at work yesterday that we ate pints of ice cream. It was so slow.
Yes, we did. There was like nothing going on, so I went to the gas station. I bought us Bluebell.
It's delicious.
And just ate the whole ass pint.
The Bluebell without the Listeria.
Without the Listeria.
That's right.
Which arguably was the best part of the old Bluebell.
Right. Anyway, okay, well, we don't have much to talk about, do we?
No, not this time around.
That's too bad. What should we talk about?
Would this be our Halloween episode?
Is this our Halloween episode?
Son of a bitch. Wait. I think this is our Halloween episode.
We should
edit it in time, it could be our Halloween.
This
no.
Could switch.
The other one needs to be our Halloween episode.
The origin story?
Yes.
You can always, I'll have to like, release them out of order. A Halloween episode and then go back to ordering it so they wouldn't be out of order. Be like
that's
Halloween
true.
Special,
so we'll say
and then go to 7.
Yeah, we'll say this is an 8. This is episode
Halloween.
Well, I wish I'd thought of a scary story then.
Don't you have a scary story?
No, mine is true crime ish.
Mine's true crime and it's pretty scary.
Ooh, hello. Well, okay,
so
we'll
Halloween.
See.
Halloween.
Hello and welcome to Too Scared to Sleep. This is our Halloween true crime special.
Where we don't tell any scary stories.
Where Jake doesn't tell any scary stories.
We should have thought this one better.
Yeah, we did. Making this a Halloween episode was a last minute plan. Thank you, Annabelle.
Thanks so much.
But you know what? We gotta make it Halloween-y. So,
Halloween-y.
Spooktober.
I guess so. Okay.
October.
You ready for my story?
I believe I'm ready for your story.
Are you ready? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I want to talk to you about Randy Weaver.
Who did?
Exactly. Who is that? Randy Weaver was the center and the focus of something we call the Ruby Ridge Standoff. Neither of you know what I'm talking about, do you?
No, but I like the word standoff.
I hate that you're so young. Okay. Randy Weaver was born in January 3rd, 1948. So he's like, anyway, he's, 70-something years old right now? 70 years old, because it's 2018.
He was born in Iowa, grew up in Iowa, joined the United States Army in 1968, and was in the Special Forces. He was stationed in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and this was at the height of the Vietnam War. He received an honorable discharge in 1971. So 68 to 71, he was in the Army, served during Vietnam. He gets married a month afterwards, and he's living in Iowa. And he originally goes to college, but he has to drop out because it's too expensive. Gets a job at a local John Deere factory, and his wife was working as a secretary, and then she became a homemaker once they started having kids. At this time, this is in the early 80s,
there was an economic downturn at that time. Reaganomics had failed. Lots of people were losing their small businesses.
Fuck Reagan.
There were lots of people who were losing their small businesses. Factories were going out of business. Businesses were moving to China. They were moving to Mexico. They were moving to India. Things were getting outsourced.
So lots of people were losing their jobs.
This was also in the height of a very familiar to me, a Christian fundamentalist movement where, I know you just rolled your eyes, but just wait.
You're going to roll your eyes even harder than that.
I'm so excited.
People honestly and truly believed that the end of the world was coming very soon, that the apocalypse was going to happen. And there's a couple of different views within mainstream Christianity and then even outside of mainstream Christianity, how the apocalypse is going to happen, what events are going to happen.
I saw 2012. I know what's up.
Right. Back in the 70s, there were these movies called Left Behind and A Distant Thunder that I watched, and they're very flower power kind of movies. But I've in heard those of movies, Left Behind. What happens in those movies, and it's a mainstream Christianity prevalent sort of idea, is that one day you're going to wake up and all of the born again Christians all over the world are going to be disappeared in an event that's called the rapture, even though the word rapture is never said in the Bible. It comes from the Latin Vulgate version of the Bible, where all of the Christians are caught up. And Jerome, who translated the Bible into Latin in that version of the Bible, used the word rapture as the term for them being caught up. I know that because I got a divinity degree in college.
Of course you did.
It's doing me a lot of good right now.
Reminds me of... was it Rapture Palooza and This Is the End?
This is the
two
end.
Two very good.
Also, what is that other show? The Left. What is that one called? I don't know. The one with Justin Theroux.
Hold on, let me look.
Where all those people get lost? Where all those people are gone? Doesn't matter. Okay. Oh shit! What is it called?
The Leftovers.
The Leftovers.
I have not seen it, so I don't know anything about it, right. But that's what popped up.
So the idea was that people were going to be, all the born-again Christians were going to be gone. All the only people left were going to be the atheists and the homosexuals and the pot smokers and the fake Christians. And that because of this, there was going to be this one world government that comes along. And there's going to be a one currency. There's going to be one religion. And it's going to be led by the Antichrist, who's going to... persecute any remaining Christians. He's going to make it illegal for them to buy food, sell goods, anything that has to do with their citizenship. He's going to take all of their rights away. He's going to be executing people who are Christians or who proclaim to be Christians. He's going to ban Bibles and such like.
Mean like the kinds of things that Christians did to people of other faith?
Exactly.
That's what I thought.
Exactly. So... Those thoughts were coming around, and they had a resurgence in the 80s when I was a kid. As a matter of fact, I went to a... I'm getting off on a tangent. It doesn't matter. Anyway, Vicky Weaver, Randy Weaver's wife, totally read into this, and she believed it. And even today, even to this day in 2018, there are still people who still think that those kinds of events are just like right on the other side of tomorrow. Those things can happen to this world. And so there's people who are stockpiling food and water and generators, and you know, they're translating
their... come into work and buy our shit generators.
Right. Don't come to work and buy our shit generators. They're gonna crap out on you. But you know, they're transferring their money into gold bullion, or they're, you know, that sort of thing. because eventually you're not going to be able to use paper money, that sort of stuff. So they believed this because of what they were seeing. You know, this was a time when the Cold War had just ended, and so Gorbachev and Russia and East Germany were no longer a threat, and there was this kind of world unity, and that played into that one world government fear, and that fear of the United States government as well, because they felt like there was a conspiracy within the United States government to have this happen.
When is there not?
Absolutely. So, because of that, they decided that they were going to move from where they lived in Iowa to remote, butt fucking out in the middle of nowhere, Ruby Ridge, Idaho. From Iowa to Idaho. They were only like 40, 50 miles from the Canadian border. They bought a plot of land at the top of a mountain, and they built a cabin out there. No running water, no electricity, no toilet inside the house. And they lived out there. Now, they already had, I think they already had two kids at the time. They ended up having four children. And yeah, they have four kids eventually. They have Sarah, Samuel, Rachel, and Elisheba, which were their kids. And the kids were homeschooled. They lived up there. And there's a very good Netflix documentary all about the Ruby Ridge standoff and what happened. And it's narrated by different people. But the person who's the main narrator is the daughter, Sarah Weaver, who was the oldest. Yeah, exactly. It was the oldest. And she talks about how great it was. And it's like, you know, a lot of people in this part of Idaho lived like that. They lived very independently. They had homes that may or may not have had electricity. They had homes that may or may not have had running water. They were homeschooled because they lived out in rural Idaho. So it wasn't weird for her.
Okay.
It was very normal for her. She's like, my brother was my best friend. We played. We were always outside. You know, she liked to garden. They planted and cultivated their own vegetables while they were up there. And so that became her thing as she got older, was that she took over the gardening aspect of it.
I really thought that when you talked about them moving to the middle of nowhere, that this was going to take a really creepy turn, but this is actually not bad.
Right.
So far.
Wait, it gets better. Okay. So some of their neighbors, just a little bit farther away from their place, maybe 30 or 40 miles from where they were, was an Aryan Nation compound.
Wonderful.
Of course. Now, these were the special kind of Aryan Nations who have that, who are trying to use Christianity as a method to spread their message of hate. And it was a particular kind of Aryan belief that said that God wanted all of the white races to be the rulers of the world, and we were then the white races are the true children of Adam and Eve, and that everyone who's black or brown or any other non-white color is actually a child of Satan, and so that's why they're supreme and that sort of thing. But these are the kind of people, because there's stock footage in the Netflix documentary. These are the kind of people who wear swastikas on their arms and wear paramilitary uniforms and that sort of thing. So even though they're standing behind a pulpit with a Bible and crosses on the walls, there's also swastikas on their arms, and a lot of that racial hate is being presented to them. But again, Sarah Weaver says, we went to these events and my dad the dad and the mom didn't necessarily believe in all of it, but your options for socialization are pretty limited when you're living out in the middle of nowhere.
I mean, yeah, you got the Aryan Brotherhood or bears.
Right. And not to mention the fact that, like, and I'm not condoning that, but let's say you're living way out there and the only guy you know who can fix your transmission on your truck happens to be a skinhead.
I mean, if you have no other options, I guess, like, what are you going to do?
Right. And then you're white, too. And, you know, some of what they're saying chimes in with you, because, like I said, they already had that apocalyptic, belief, and they also had a fear of the federal government. So some of it was the same. But what happened was eventually an ATF informant was trying to get in with the Aryan Nation. And he spotted Randy Weaver at a rally for the Aryan Nation.
And so he tried to use Weaver as the person who would get him in with the Aryans.
Okay.
And he presents himself and he asks Randy Weaver in 1989 to saw off some shots, the barrels of a couple of shotguns for him. Which really isn't that difficult if you really think about it.
Yeah.
But this is how he was trying to, this was how he was trying to get into it. So, one thing leads to another. The ATF agent isn't able to make his case, but he presents himself and he decides, okay, I'm going to tell Randy Weaver what's going on. And he says, Randy Weaver, you know, we're going to arrest you because you've altered these shotguns, which is against federal law. If you don't give us the name of somebody in the Aryan Nation that we can flip. We want to use you as a stepping stone to present a bigger case.
What a dick move.
Right? It's a dick move. Why not just leave him alone? So he refuses. And at one point, the ATF agent was told by his superiors not to have any more contact with Weaver. But they're still trying to make a case. And so they present these federal charges against Randy Weaver. And they want him to go to court. His original court date was February 19th, 1991, but it was changed the following day, and pre-trial services sends Weaver a notice that says that his trial date is March 20th, which is the next month.
Yeah.
But they don't send it in time, and so he misses his hearing, and they issue a warrant for his arrest.
What the hell?
And they tell the U.S. Marshal Service that they need to serve this warrant and bring Randy Weaver into jail, you know, into prison so that they can, you know, carry out this warrant for his arrest. The U.S. Marshal Service wanted Weaver to show up in court on March 20th. They said, why don't we just let him go to March 20th? You know, we'll bring him in then. The U.S. Attorney's Office wanted to put down a grand jury indictment. It's just an escalation. Once you're in the system, you're fucked by the system.
Yeah, of course.
So Randy Weaver knows that there's a warrant out there for his arrest. So he stops going into town. The kids stop going into town. They stop going to rallies. And this is part of the documentary, like I said. The daughter, Sarah, says basically from March of 1991 to August of 1992, they never left the mountain. They just Jesus. Stayed up there. You know, they were afraid that if they drove down there or they went to a rally somewhere, that they're going to get stopped, that the cops are going to just show up somewhere and the dad is going to get arrested. So they're up there. They're trying to self-sustain. They probably have friends who are going to help them, you know, with any supplies or anything like that. Hey, can you go and buy us a 50-pound bag of beans or whatever you need? So, but they're up there. And while they're up there, The wife actually gives birth to the fourth and last child that they have up there on that fucking mountain.
Jesus Christ.
With no medical services. But it was crazy. The U.S. Marshals tried to work out a plan for voluntary surrender, but the U.S. Attorney's Office refused it.
So he's directing the Marshal Service to try to figure out a way to do this, to try to bring this guy in.
So, They put him on surveillance. They got guys in fatigues, in military fatigues, carrying semi-automatic AR rifles who are, you know, on ridges out there spying on the house with night vision goggles and, you know, sniper scopes trying to figure out what's going on with the family.
I'm
going to
cut this out. So it's the kind of guy that Patrick thinks he is.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is the kind of guy that Patrick thinks he is, even though he's not.
He is not.
What they notice is that Randy Weaver and his oldest son, who's 14 at the time, they never leave the house without being armed.
Oh, damn.
They've always got a rifle with them, at least. So they realize that it could escalate very quickly. And so they're trying to say, no, it's not a good idea to try to go in loud. It is not a good idea to have a tactical assault ready for this guy. It's going to end badly. So what they had recommended, the Marshal Service, they thought what we should do is drop this indictment and then refile another indictment later on and not tell him so that he drops his guard, comes into town, then we can catch him peacefully when he's in town, when he doesn't have his rifle, when he's not in his own area.
Yeah.
Which is a smart move. But again, they said no. They want to get out of there. So
this is where everything goes tits up. August 21st, 1992. Six or seven U.S. Marshals, like I said, in military uniform with military rifles, go up there to try to survey the area one more time. They split off into two squads, and they're looking. One of the squads is on high ground. The other one is coming up this one game trail towards the house.
It's over, Anakin. I have the high ground.
It is. It's over, Anakin. I have the high ground. Well, one of the Weaver's dogs catches either the sound of them or the scent of them and starts to bark. And he starts to bark and go crazy, and he starts to pursue them. So these U.S. Marshals are being pursued by a dog. What is the son's name? Sam Weaver. Samuel Weaver, the son who's 14-year-old, who's 14 years old at the time, and a 24-year-old friend of theirs named Kevin Harris left the house with rifles armed to investigate what the sound was. And the situation comes to a head, and it goes tits up. Also, Randy Weaver leaves the house at the same time, and they're coming on two different trails to try to figure out what's going on. Now, this is where it gets fucked, is because later on, Randy Weaver and Kevin Harris tried to tell the story one way, and of course, the U.S. Marshals are telling the story the other way.
Of course they are.
Randy and Kevin say, we thought maybe the dogs had heard like a deer or some sort of game, and so we're trying to pursue for food. And the U.S. Marshals are like, the dogs hurt us, and we're just trying to get out of there. So they're coming down, and the story that the U.S. Marshals say is that they got to a certain point when they realized they weren't going to get away from the dog. And so they turned from running, and they took up defensive positions.
Motherfuckers.
And they right? And they come up, and Kevin Harris and Sammy Weaver show up first. And the Marshals say, U.S. Marshals, put your hands up. And instead of complying, Harrison Weaver, the son, open fire on the U.S. Marshals. Mm-hmm. And end up exchanging gunfire, and one of the U.S. Marshals dies. And Kevin Weaver gets shot in the arm, and then he gets shot in the back. A 14-year-old boy got shot in the back.
Jesus Christ.
And he dies right there on this game trail. Wow. So that's the marshal. That's what the marshals say. We said, you know, we told them to put their hands up. We told them that they were, we identified ourselves, and then we were fired upon, and then we returned fire. The story that that Randy Weaver and Kevin Harris tell is that they were coming down the game trail. The dogs spotted the dogs came up to the people, and that one of the U.S. Marshals killed one of the dogs. And then when that happened, Sammy Harris said, "You killed my dog, you son of a bitch," and then started shooting. But either way, right then and there, August 21st, 1992, we have a dead U.S. Marshal and we have a dead 14-year-old.
And potentially a dead dog.
Right, potentially a dead dog. The dog was definitely dead. So,
and a dead dog.
Both sides retreat. Randy and Kevin get back to the house. And they tell the family, they tell the mom and the three sisters, Sammy's been shot. He's dead. The wife just loses it. She's so beside herself. The U.S. Marshals run down the hill. Remember I told you they broke off into two groups. Well, the second group that were on the high ground, they finally make it over there and they try to perform CPR. Their marshal is dead. So they pick him up and they go down the hill and they call in the fucking cavalry. So the wheels start turning again.
God damn it.
I know. It goes from bad to fucking worse. So what happens next is that the FBI's hostage rescue team gets called in. And these are the bad motherfuckers.
Yeah. If
the U.S. Marshals were pretty bad, these are worse. They call in, and their idea, their rules of engagement are deadly force can and should be used against any armed adult male if the shot can be taken without a child being injured. You don't have to identify yourself. You don't have to ask them to surrender. You can just, if you get the shot,
show
you can
up and
fucking
kill some bitches.
Take it. Yes. Jesus. So these guys get mobilized. So August 22nd, the next day, the
Sammy Weaver was in a shed. They had his body there. And Randy says, I want to go see him one more time. So he leaves the house. The girls and the wife are in the house. Leaves the house. Kevin Harris says, I'll go with you. They have their weapons, of course. They go down there, and a sniper tries to shoot at them. Harris and Weaver are both shot going to the shed.
God
they run back to the house. and still at the same time, in their account, they still don't know who's being shot at, who's shooting at them. I mean, they assume it's the federal government, I'm sure. But they're running back to the house, and Randy gets in. He'd been shot in the shoulder. And as they're getting into the house, Vicky Weaver, the wife, opens the door for them. She's got her 10-month-old daughter clutched to her chest. Weaver gets in the house. Kevin Harris gets in the house, and Vicky Weaver goes to grab the door. And as she's turning, one of the FBI snipers blows her fucking head off.
Jesus Christ.
Takes the shot, blows her head off.
What the hell?
The daughter, Sarah Weaver, says she was standing right there. She says she heard the crack of the rifle, something hit her face, and the next thing she knew, her mother was slumped on the floor with the baby in her arms.
Oh my God.
But the mom
What happened
is,
to if the shot is clear and no child will be harmed?
Exactly.
You're
gonna blow
Not only a mother's
that,
brains out but when that, she's holding a fucking baby?
Exactly. But the bullet went through her and ended up in Kevin Harris's chest.
Jesus.
Yes. Because I'm sure it was a 50 caliber sniper
yeah.
round. So she's dead. Now we've got Sammy Harris dead, we've got Vicky Weaver dead, and they're in the house.
And a bunch of injured people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so from then on, the Weavers and Kevin Harris never leave the house. Kevin Harris is in so much pain because he's already been shot in the arm from running back into the house. And now he's been shot in the chest. Sarah Weaver says in the documentary that he was just writhing on the bed, begging to be killed, begging to be put on his misery.
God.
Put out of his misery.
And this guy's not even part of the family.
He's not even part of the family.
He's
just
a friend that showed up and was trying to be a good guy.
And I know that I realize that I'm painting the federal government in a bad light.
They're painting themselves in a bad light, all right? Yeah.
But this was a bad situation gone real bad.
Yeah.
This was a, you know, and there are, and, you know, I'm sure that only 5 people are going to listen to us, and so it really doesn't matter what I'm going to say. But I'm going to say that there are probably hundreds of thousands of federal agents all over the country who perform their duties perfectly normal and perfectly fine and by the book and do exactly what they're supposed to do and do it without any praise and put themselves in harm's way all the time. And they do it so that we can sleep peacefully and go to Walmart and go to McDonald's and get morbidly obese and do the stupid bullshit that we do.
But then you also have the guy that blows a mother's brains out while she's holding her baby.
There's
so,
that
you
guy
know.
Who makes all of those guys look real bad.
Exactly.
So, for the next 10 days, there's a standoff.
Jesus, 10 days?
They called in everybody after this. There were like, at the height of the standoff, there were about 350 to 400 government agents, FBI, ATF, you know, probably the fucking National Guard.
That's too many for one small house.
All
That's
of these
such
people.
A waste of
yes.
taxpayer dollars.
And they're there with the helicopters and everything. They're all up there. Now, they don't know who's been shot. They only know that Sammy Weaver has been shot. They think that a couple of people have been shot and injured. They only know that Sammy Weaver has been killed. They have no idea that Vicky Weaver has been killed at this point. So the hostage negotiators that are there have loudspeakers, and every morning for those 10 days, they go up there and they say, "Vicky, are you there? Vicky, we have blueberry pancakes here at the camp for the kids. Vicky, why don't you bring the kids out?"
That's got to be torture for that family.
Yes, that only made Randy Weaver even more upset.
I can imagine so.
Right?
Like, I get that the government didn't know, but like, Jesus, can you imagine having to see her brains get blown out mm-hmm. all over you and the children, mm-hmm. and then Absolutely. Every day for 10 days, you have somebody calling out to her? It would get to the point where I would go past being heartbroken and be like, these motherfuckers are mocking my family.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to kill a bitch.
He's got to feel some, no pun intended, white hot rage.
Oh my God.
About it. That's where I'm going to go from here. Okay, so here's what's happening also. Down the hill, you've got reporters, you've got newspaper reporters, you've got the news, and they're I'll say this about the documentary. The documentary also paints the federal government and the government agents in a pretty bad light. But they only have one person narrating as one of the hostage negotiators. They interview one hostage negotiator. They interview Sarah Weaver, the daughter, and they also interview 2 defense attorneys that helped Randy Weaver with his trial after these events.
Mm-hmm.
Because spoiler alert, he survives. The defense attorneys talk about how the how the briefings, the press briefings given by the special agent in charge were just like horrible. They was like, they didn't have any information. They didn't try to get any information. They sent a robot up there with the hostage phone. Because again, the family has no electricity in the house. They sent a robot up there, but it turns out the robot also had a rifle on it.
What the hell?
Right?
What kind of robot?
So they send the rifle. I mean, they send the robot with the rifle and the phone. The phone just sits on the porch. Nobody ever grabs it. They don't grab it. They don't go for it. The newspapers were reporting, and at the very beginning of the 10-day standoff, they were reporting that it was they were painting Randy Weaver as a anti-government, Aryan, you know, white supremacist, which may or may not have been true. You know, they definitely used his association with the Aryan Nation, with the white supremacists that were close to them, as a point of reference.
Yeah.
To try to make him look bad. And, you know, they were talking about how the federal agent had been killed. Then they were talking about how Sammy Weaver had been killed. But then they started to interview someone went and bothered to interview the family that was still living in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Iowa, Idaho.
Yeah.
Iowa. And they were saying, no, they're not white supremacists. They don't feel that way. They're fundamental Christians. You know, they started to interview family members from there who knew them a little bit better.
Get the real truth.
And so they kind of got a mixed, you know, they got some of the real truth, and it kind of meets up in the middle. I mean, they did this thing, but what happened was, and there's stock footage of, or not stock footage, but there's footage from the standoff, is you can see that white supremacist groups and those guys showed up at the police barricade, mm-hmm. and were yelling at the government agents, and you know, we're throwing slurs up there. At one point, a group of skinheads tried to smuggle some weapons up to the family and got caught. So that's not helping anybody's case. But I mean, you're talking about people who are already fiercely independent and suspicious of the government, and this is all just feeding into that.
Oh yeah,
this is exactly their worst case scenario. This is exactly what they plan for. This is what they prepare for. This is what they're afraid of.
This is what they're afraid of, but also kind of their wet dream.
Yes, yes. Okay, so nothing's getting taken care of. They're just up there. There's no contact. So what they decide is that a guy named Bo Greitz, who was a unbelievably decorated Army Special Forces soldier, he decides, and he'd also been a commanding officer for Randy Weaver when he was in the Army, he is going to show up and he's going to be the mediator. Now, Bo Greitz was, like I said, highly decorated, but also kind of a white supremacist as well. So he's hitting all those bases. He's covering all those bases. So, and they also talked to Bo Greitz. So Bo Greitz you get to see him in this documentary as well. They talk to him, and he goes up there, and he tries to talk to Randy Weaver, and this is like the seventh or eighth day when they finally get him up there, and he goes up there, and Randy Weaver finally talks to somebody. He's like, "Is that you, Bo?" He's like, "Yeah." It's like, "Is everybody okay?" And he's like, "No, Kevin's been shot, Sammy's dead, Vicky's been shot too." So they come off the, he comes off the mountain, and he tells everybody, and at that point, it's like the federal government looks like the worst motherfucking agency to ever exist on this planet.
Yeah. Because
they killed the mother of four children.
Yeah.
And now everybody knows. And it just makes it even worse. It just makes it worse. So Bo goes back and forth for about 2 or 3 days trying to figure it out. At one point, and you guys don't know because it was so long ago, but there used to be this guy on radio named Paul Harvey. And Paul Harvey got involved, or tried to get involved. He was Dr. Phil before Dr. Phil was Dr. Phil.
I hate Dr. Phil. Fuck Dr.
Paul.
Phil.
I hate Dr. Phil and Paul Harvey so much. But Paul Harvey was begging and pleading on his radio show for Randy Weaver to turn himself in. And he even offered to pay for a defense lawyer for him. So finally, after 10 days, Bo Greitz convinces Randy Weaver to come out of the house.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I think on the seventh day, they let Kevin Harris out of the house so that he could get medical attention.
Okay, good.
And he was just hurt. But it's just so sad that the story of the family really is sad. Because they walk out of there hand in hand, and, you know, there's three kids left, And Sarah Weaver talks about how she walked down the hill and there were just all of these guys. They're all in, you know, fatigues, army fatigues, and they're just hanging around. She's like, it looked like they were on a camping trip. It looked like they were completely divorced of the gravity of the situation that was happening just like a quarter of a mile up the hill.
Yeah.
You know, they're up there afraid for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
They're afraid of, you know, getting near a window because someone might blow their fucking head off. And these guys down here are just hanging out because it's like, it's every one of those guys' wet dreams. One of those guys that we know, those piece of shit AR-15 carrying, you know, think they're so badass, think they're going to...
braggadocious, you know, assholes.
Yes, braggadocious assholes who, you know, talk about how they've got the Second Amendment right to shoot anybody who comes onto their property. These are the kind of guys that were up there.
Yeah.
So we should probably cut that out.
You should probably cut that out. I'm going to make that Patrick's ringtone.
So the aftermath. Weaver and Harris were charged with all sorts of charges based on all of this. They were... Their defense lawyers did a really good job, of course. The federal government looked like shitheads. So eventually, what the aftermath is, long story short, all of the charges were dropped except the original weapons charge.
Badass.
Everything else was dropped. All the criminal charges were dropped because they argued that it was in self-defense. And we got two different stories of why Sammy, you know, it's like 14-year-old boy trumps U.S. Marshal any day. Sorry.
I mean, look at all the shit that this government has done.
No.
Killed a 14-year-old. Killed a dog. Killed a mother.
Killed a dog. Let's not forget the dog.
I will never forget the
His
dog.
His dog's name was Stryker, too.
Poor baby. Sweet baby. Where's Pappas? I want to love him, Pappas. I love you, baby boy.
Anyway.
So all the criminal charges get dropped. The only thing that stuck was that original bullshit weapons charge about the sawed-off shotguns.
The family ended up suing the federal government and getting $3.1 million, I believe it was. They ended up getting damages for what happened. But again, scarred for life.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I hope the federal government is going to pay for all of the fucking therapists these people are going
to
need.
Right. Not to mention the fact that, and one of the things that Sarah Weaver talks about is how, based on this, the FBI's special task force, their rules of engagement were changed, and that the federal government uses the Ruby Ridge standoff as a training exercise of basically what not to do to make a bad situation worse.
Yeah.
So that's that story. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Why'd you have to use the bathroom now?
I do have to pee, actually.
I wouldn't turn the fan on. I'm hot.
Hey, are you ready?
I am too ready.
Too ready to sleep?
Stop it.
Anyway, so I'm
Where?
Annabelle, yeah.
I'm making the flaccid penis motion with my finger.
With your penis? Anyway. So, oh my god, that's your phone. All right, anyway, it's more editing for me. My topic for our now decided Halloween episode is going to make up for how unspooky yours was. Yours was good, but it was not spooky. Mine's pretty not good. Today I'm going to be talking about the one, the only, Albert Fish.
Oh god, this is the best. This is going to make up for mine.
This is a real rough one. He also went by the nicknames The Gray Man and The Werewolf of Wisteria. So that's fun. So, too long didn't read version of it. This man was a murderer, a rapist, a cannibal, and a pedophile. So, hitting so many good bases right now.
That's almost like when somebody wins an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony.
You're right.
Yes.
It's the trifecta.
It is. It's four.
Quadfecta.
Perfect.
What the fuck am I supposed to say with that?
It's the Grand Slam. We'll call it the Grand Slam.
He's the Grand
Slam.
There's
our title. It's
the Grand Slam.
I'll have a Grand Slam, please.
Oh my god. No, you're not a child. He won't want to Grand Slam you. I have to edit that out. That was bad.
The Grand Slam is a Denny's thing.
I know it's a Denny's thing. Whatever. We're talking about Albert Fish.
Okay.
So he was born May 19th, 1870. He was born to a relatively normal family. He had some siblings, a mom and a dad. But
let me guess, the mom was either deeply abusive or the father was an alcoholic and also was abusive. What did they do to him? They had to have done something to him.
Let me tell you. This part's actually going to be kind of disappointing.
I'm sorry I spoiled it.
You should be. So, when Albert Fish was 5 years old, his father passed away. From what I could tell, it didn't seem like anybody was that abusive or super crazy religious fanatic or anything. But, like I said, he's five, his father passes away. His mother couldn't support the family, so she sent Albert off to an orphanage. Now's when the dark shit starts.
Okay.
One of the punishments in the orphanage where he stayed was that they would make the children strip naked and they would beat the children in front of the others, like make the other kids watch while this poor naked child was being beaten. Here's where the weirder shit starts. Fish enjoyed the punishments and he found them arousing. Like he would enjoy watching other kids getting beaten.
This poor kid.
Right? So he stayed in the orphanage until he was about 9 years old, when mom got financially stable and came back for him. So she actually came back for her kid. In 1882, he was about 12 years old, he started a relationship with a telegraph boy and started getting his freak on, but not in the good way. There were reports of him... We're just going to go for it. Drinking urine, eating human feces.
Ugh, gross.
And he would enjoy making people undress in public bathrooms and watching them. He moved to New York City when he was about 20 years old. And he started his career as a male prostitute. This is also about the time that he started to sexually assault young boys.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're jumping right into it. It's like how your story went from bad to real bad. Ours is going to keep snowballing like that.
Got it.
So in 1898, his mother arranged a marriage for him to a 19-year-old woman, and he ended up having 6 children with her. He got a legitimate job as a handyman, and I think as a plumber, too? I don't know. He was a construction-y handyman guy. Unfortunately, while he was married to her, he continued to sexually assault boys. Most of them were under the age of 6. He also assaulted those with mental handicaps and African-American children because he believed that the police wouldn't investigate the black kids as much.
That's the grand slam.
That's the grand slam. We have got racism now, and then pedophilia, murder, cannibalism, rape. It's just super good.
Right. That's just the worst.
Oh, yeah. So he was arrested in 1903 for embezzlement and held in Sing Sing prison, where he continued homosexual relationships with the men in prison.
As one does.
As one does. I don't remember exactly when he was released. Let's see. Okay. Yeah, he was released after a couple years. After being released from prison, he became more obsessed with sadomasochism, and in 1910, he started a heavily sadomasochistic relationship with a 19-year-old man named Thomas. Now, some people said Thomas was mentally handicapped. Other people say he wasn't, so I don't know for sure. Point was, dude my age hooking up with this guy who just got out of prison and is into super weird, dark, kinky shit. Not the good kind of kinky shit. One of the biggest stories about Fish and Thomas was that Fish brought Thomas to an abandoned farmhouse and kept him chained up and tortured him for 2 weeks weird sexual ways. Instead of killing Thomas, which Fish had planned to do originally, he continued to torture him. He then cut off half of Thomas's penis to have as a trophy. He cleaned Thomas's wounds and gave him $10 as a consolation.
How much was $10 back then?
I don't know.
Wasn't that like $100, maybe?
Something like that. However much it was, not enough to That's cover true. Getting half of your dick cut off.
For sure.
And we have no idea what happened to Thomas afterwards. He was given the $10, his wounds were cleaned, he was sent on his way.
And we never hear from him again.
Never heard from him again.
Not in this story.
In 1917, which is 7 years after this was going on, Albert's wife left him and their children for another man. She just straight up abandoned all of them. When his wife left, of course, he went a little batshit.
More so?
More so, yeah. Oh, yeah. You thought we were at a 10 earlier? No. We were at like a 7.
We'll crank this fucker up to 11.
That's where we're going. So he started self-harming a lot, but, you know, not like normal kind of like...
I read about this. Slicing I know where you're going with this. I love shit. It. I love it.
Yeah, it's real dark. He would hit himself with a paddle that was covered in nails. He stabbed himself in the chest with needles, like just pushed needles into his abdomen. He took cloths that were doused in lighter fluid. One of the reports I said that he would put them into his asshole, mm-hmm. and he would light them on fire and then remove it shortly after. He also shoved pins under his fingernails, which is the fucking worst.
Why would you willingly do that?
Because he's a freak.
That's insane.
That's real insane. And he did this all in front of his kids. And here's the kicker. He would make his children abuse him. He would make them hit him with various objects like it was a game.
I'm mad at the mom for leaving the kids.
I'm mad at the mom for leaving the kids, too. That's... But I'm more mad at Albert Fish for being a fucking freak.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. The only upside is that apparently he never molested his own children. It was only everybody else's kids.
Oh, but they're still messed up.
Yeah, no, but they're still fucked up. One of the reports I read said that the game was where Albert would get, like, mostly naked or entirely naked and kind of, like, get on his hands and knees and make his kids sit on his back, and he would tell them to hold up, you know, a number of fingers, and without looking, he would guess. And he said if he got it wrong, they would hit him once for every finger that the kids had up.
So he just wants to be paddled.
Yeah, but sometimes it was, like, with the nail paddle. Sometimes it was with regular paddles.
That's right.
Sometimes it was, like, you know, paint sticks, whatever they could find, basically baseball bats, pretty much anything. And he would get it wrong most of the time, you know? So it's just got to be all sorts of dark. So back to the outside world, getting away from his super perfectly normal home life. Albert abducted and murdered children throughout the country. So it wasn't just one little area. He's a traveling man. He's a cultured man. Mm.
Papa was a Rolling Stone.
Papa was a Rolling Stone. Papa, can you hear me?
And do you want to build a snowman?
Exactly. Anyway, one of the more well-known victims of Fish, I don't remember the boy's name, but it was one of the boys he abducted and assaulted, and he strangled the boy with his own suspenders and then just basically tossed him in the woods. Left him to be found there. Later in life, Albert grew a taste for raw meat, like from animals, which then kind of snowballed into him becoming a cannibal.
Right.
Billy Gaffney was a 4-year-old boy who was abducted in 1927 playing with one of his friends. The friend was also named Billy, if I remember correctly. Billy Gaffney was abducted. The other boy was taken too, but was not actually abducted. He was just basically moved somewhere else. They found the other Billy pretty quickly, and he said that, quote, the boogeyman took him being the other Billy.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. They never found Gaffney's body, but Albert described in gruesome detail what he did to the boy. He mutilated and assaulted the boy. He drank his blood, chopped him into pieces, and cooked him and ate him. He, from that point on, continued his kidnappings where he would torture, kill, and then he would start eating his victims. Like, everyone that he got, he would eat at least some portion of them. But one of Fish's most notorious killings was a 10-year-old girl named Grace Budd. So, Fish met with Edward Budd to discuss Budd working with Fish around Fish's farm. During one of the visits, Edward's daughter, Grace, came home. Fish became enamored with her, and after spending a little bit of time with them, he invited Grace to come with him to a birthday party that his niece was having. The family, it was like early 1900s, things are a little different.
I was about to say, no one in their right mind would say yes.
No one in the right mind would say yes now. Back then, you know, they knew Fish. Fish was also going under the alias Frank Howard. But he, you know, they thought they knew this guy. And, you know, they'd been working with him for a little while. He seemed nice enough. He was kind of an older guy, but, you know, he seemed harmless. The parents were like, sure, that's fine. Go have fun with other kids. Fish said, don't worry about it. I'll bring her home by 9 p.m., you don't have anything to worry about. Spoiler alert, they should have worried.
Right. Was this the last time they ever saw her?
This was the last time they ever saw their 10-year-old daughter, Grace. Fish took Grace out to the countryside, took her to an empty house. He told Grace to wait outside and, you know, kind of just play around, pick flowers or whatever, while he said he was going to go inside and clean up. Instead of going inside to clean up, Fish went into the house and got totally naked.
God damn it.
He then called Grace into the house, exposing himself, and then attacked her. He strangled her to death, decapitated her, and then chopped her up and ate her. If you'll give me just a second, let me look something up.
Okay.
Ding, 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 ding. Ding, ding, ding.
All right. Okay, so. Chopped her up and ate her. Then that was basically the end of that. It was, you know, the family thought that they took, or, you know, they knew that this guy that they knew as Frank Howard took their daughter. Frank Howard was an alias, mm-hmm. You know. They had no way of knowing where they were. There was no tracing cell phones or looking at cameras.
Right.
They were just gone. Then 7 years after he killed and ate Grace, Albert sent a letter to the family describing in detail what he did.
Fuck.
Which...
this is disgusting.
Yeah, it is. Luckily, this letter led to police finding Albert Fish. But before I get any further in that, I'm very sorry, but I'm going to read the letter that Albert Fish wrote to the family.
Go ahead. We're in for it.
We're in for it.
Mm-hmm.
This was sent in November of 1934. It is, quote, "Dear Mrs. Budd, in 1894, a friend of mine shipped as a deckhand on the steamer Tacoma, Captain John Davis. They sailed from San Francisco to Hong Kong, China. On arriving there, he and two others went ashore and got drunk. When they returned, the boat was gone. All that time, there was famine in China. Meat of any kind was $1 to $3 per pound. So great was the suffering among the very poor that all children under 12 were sold for food in order to keep others from starving. A boy or girl under 14 was not safe in the streets. You could go in any shop and ask for steak, chops, or stew meat. Part of the naked body of a boy or girl would be brought out, and just what you wanted cut from it. A boy or girl's behind, which was the sweetest part of the body, was sold as veal cutlet, bought the highest price. John stayed there so long he acquired a taste for human flesh. On his return to New York, he stole two boys, 1 7 and 1 11. Took them to his home, stripped them naked, tied them in a closet, then burned everything they had on. Several times a day and night, he spanked them, tortured them, to make their meat good and tender. First, he killed the 11-year-old boy because he had the fattest ass, and of course the most meat on it. Every part of his body was cooked and eaten except the head, bones and guts. Except the head, bones and guts. He was roasted in the oven, all of his ass, boiled, broiled, fried, and stewed. The little boy was next, went the same way. At that time, I was living at 409 East 100 Street near Right Side. He told me so often how good human flesh was, I made up my mind to taste it.
This is disgusting.
Yeah. Luckily, this is the last paragraph.
Okay.
On Sunday, June the 3rd, 1928, I called on you at 406 West 15th Street, brought you pot cheese, strawberries, we had lunch. Grace sat in my lap and kissed me. I made up my mind to eat her. On the pretense of taking her to a party, you said yes, she could go. I took her to an empty house in Westchester I had already picked out. When we got there, I told her to remain outside. She picked wildflowers. I went upstairs, stripped all my clothes off. I knew if I did not, I would get blood on them. When all was ready, I went to the window and called her. I hid in a closet until she was in the room. When she saw me all naked, she began to cry and tried to run down the stairs. I grabbed her and said I grabbed her and she said she would tell her mama. First, I stripped her naked, how she did kick, bite, and scratch. I choked her to death, then cut her in small pieces so I could take my meat to my rooms, cook and eat it. How sweet and tender her little ass was roasted in the oven. It took me 9 days to eat her entire body. I did not fuck her, though I could have had I wished. She died a virgin.
Horrible.
That was the letter she sent to the family of this girl that she or that he ate. You're welcome. That was rough. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I knew it was coming. It's just disgusting to hear somebody do that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's real rough. But the good part about this was that this letter led them to Albert Fish, because this was all handwritten, of course. He handwrote another letter somewhere else, so they were able to analyze the two, figure out it was the same person, and tie that to Albert Fish.
Okay.
He was arrested, and when he went on trial, he tried to plead insanity for his crimes, claiming that God had told him to kill children. During his medical examination, when they were trying to, you know, they were seeing what was going on with him, mm-hmm. they examined his brain. It was revealed that he had 29 needles embedded into his pelvis from his self-harm.
That's disgusting.
Were still there. Yeah. The trial lasted 10 days, and the jury found him to be sane and guilty. The jury actually believed that he was insane, but they didn't want to mark it off as insane because they wanted the death penalty for him, which he got. Which he deserved more than... I wish there was a way to kill somebody more than once.
Right.
In prison, he confessed to 3 other murders, 2 more stabbings, and various acts of cannibalism and rapes. He said at one point he had a child in every state, or he had children in every state.
My God.
Yeah. He was executed in 1936, and fun fact, was the oldest man to ever be executed in Sing Sing Correctional Facility.
Interesting.
Yeah. James Dempsey was the defense attorney that worked with Albert. He was there for that. You know, he saw the execution and he talked with Fish right beforehand. He then met with the reporters right after the death of Fish, and he held in his hand several pages of notes, that Albert had handwritten. We think that they were confessions of other things. In great detail, just his crimes and thoughts. He had written these hours before his death. He gave them to Dempsey, and Dempsey came out and was talking to these reporters. And the only thing he told the reporters was, "I will never show them to anyone. It was the most filthy string of obscenities I've ever read." God and to damn. This day, those notes have never been made public.
That reminds me of Ted Bundy and how
he, Ted Bundy was rough too, yeah.
Yeah, and how he confessed to a lot of his crimes right before he was put to death.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know this, but when Ted Bundy did an interview with a Christian, I would call him a Christian personality, but a guy named James Dobson, who's Dr. James Dobson.
Yeah. Was that the one where he blamed everything on pornography?
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
That is the one.
Yeah.
Yes. He met with Dr. James Dobson, which is from Focus on the Family, which is also called, I mean, when you think about Focus on the Family, you should think of Focus on Homophobia. That's what they really are.
You right.
And, yeah, he blamed everything on pornography.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no, you can watch porn for 1,000 years and never become a cannibal.
Yeah.
You can watch porn for 1,000 years and never kill a person.
I don't think any amount of porn would ever make me think, wow, I really need to go kill and eat somebody right now.
Right, that's not the point of it. At least not the stuff I'm kidding.
Well.
Just kidding. Edit that out.
No, I'm not editing that out.
Don't.
But anyway, that was the horrible, horrible story of Albert Fish.
I'm telling you, man. The one grand of these days, slam. One of these days when they've already sequenced the human genome, one of these days you're going to realize that there is a subspecies of human out there that is a predator. That is just a downright kill all of the other humans predator out there. And that's why there are some people who do these sorts of things.
What kind of evolutionary trait survived so long that it was like, let's go into a dude and tell this dude that he needs to rape children and then kill and eat them?
Well, I don't know about the raping, but the killing and the eating? I don't know. That would be a good sci-fi movie. Is like at the same time that a neurologist and a whatever, a genome expert realize that there's a subspecies of predatory human out there, that like the overpopulation problem that we have on the Earth tips ever so slightly, that suddenly that recessive gene or that latent gene that's just there that isn't activated suddenly activates in people and they start to kill and eat other humans.
Oh my God.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that would be good.
That would make a good...
This is a zombie movie.
Yeah, but they're all like conscious people and they can talk and live.
Kind of.
Oh, The Strain's vampires. I haven't watched The Strain.
Yeah, it's vampires.
But it's about it's about the balance. It's like, oh my God.
Perfectly balanced. As all things should be.
World War Z.
Z Nation looks like it's shit. No offense if you guys like Z Nation, but from what I've seen, looks like a garbage show.
If you've never read World War Z, you need to read it. You need to stop what you're doing.
World War Z is good.
Pants back up and start reading World War Z.
I'm gonna gloss over that.
Stop playing with your knife and read World War Z.
You're also playing with your knife. I don't want to hear it. Yeah. I just told you I have.
Well, I look at you in the eye.
Yes.
And whisper your name.
Stop it. Anyway, so this Halloween episode has been horrific for me, having to listen to Jake say that.
Liar. Why are you lying?
I'm not lying.
If you say so. Well,
is that it?
I guess this is our Halloween episode, and we are grateful for everybody who's listening. We hope you have a fun and safe Halloween. Make sure, because fundamental Christians will tell you that there are razor blades in your apples and there are needles in your Tootsie Rolls, but that's also a myth. Just like creation. No, I'm kidding. Have a safe and happy Halloween, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. We hope y'all have a blast. Be safe, you know, wear a condom.
That's right, absolutely. You don't need no Halloween baby.
Wrap it before you tap it.
That's right.
No glove, no love. Don't be a dummy. Come under tummy.
Oh, shut up.
No, pull out method doesn't work.
Edit out.
I'm editing that out. We're giving good life advice, real life advice.
Instead of doing shout outs to people that we like, we should do a negative thing where we talk about the people that we hate and then we just edited it out.
Didn't we already do that?
We probably did.
We did that with Patrick, and I did that with Dawn a couple episodes ago.
That's right. Fucking Jerry.
Fucking Jerry.
Don't forget Jerry.
Never forget.
All right, Dylan, you got anything?
No, I think I'm good. This was fun.
Annabelle's been ignoring us for at least the last 10 minutes.
Annabelle's been asleep with her dog for the last 10 minutes.
That's right. Annabelle, you good? All right. Well, if that's it, we wanted to, again, thank you for listening. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram.
And we hope that we have left you too scared to sleep.
Bow!